I'm back. This is Alex Pardo, and this is the Flip Empire Show. You're about to listen to episode 481.
Welcome to the Flip Empire Show, bringing you the interviews, strategies, and insights for smart real estate investors. Alex is ready to answer your questions and provide you with the tools you need to succeed in real estate, all through case studies, current real-life transactions, and proven marketing strategies. Your success and freedom starts now with your host, Alex Pardo.
What's going on, guys? So we're going to pick up today's episode here with part two of the storage versus mobile home parks real estate investing heavyweights debate. If you haven't already listened to round one, I should say, which was acquisitions, then make sure you check out episode 480, which was the previous episode. And today, what I'm doing is we carved out from this debate round two and round three, which we focused on dispositions and financing. And these are big ones, guys. So when it comes to these commercial asset classes, like self-storage, like mobile home parks, people are always interested in, you know, can you wholesale these properties? What does it look like when you sell these? What kind of paydays are you looking at? When it comes to financing, what are the different financing options that are out there? And what we covered in this debate was not just that, but which is the superior asset class, okay, when it comes to self-storage, when it comes to mobile home parks. So in episode 481 here, again, what you are about to get is a snippet of what we covered in round two and round three between Scott Myers and Mike Wagner, who are representing the self-storage side of the debate, versus Kevin Bupp and Ryan Norris, which were defending and debating for mobile home parks. And so without further ado, let's hop into episode 481 here. We're gonna head over and transition into dispositions. All right. So we're actually gonna start, and as you're gonna see, I'm gonna alternate back and forth so that it's fair across the board. I'm gonna give the mobile home park guys a chance to lead us off and kick us off when it comes to why do you guys feel mobile home parks are in a superior asset class? Specifically, now we're talking dispositions.
Yeah, go ahead, Ryan. Start us off, bud.
Sure thing. So when you look at how things traded, especially during this downturn, quarter two alone faced, or at least saw, $800 million pour into this space. Now, why is that relevant? Because realistically speaking, that sounds like a really, really small number. And it's true because there are only approximately 42,000 to 49,000 mobile home parks in existence. So it's a really niched asset class. So what's up with the big investment? Well, again, when you look at, for example, the turnover for something like, I don't know, self-storage, especially during a downturn when you have a lot of hands-on marketing and stuff to get people back in. When you have people that are staying put for 14 plus years and your rents average it from the 200s to and upwards of the 500s, and it's your house that you've invested in and it's yours, Wall Street has finally caught on to this idea, because for the longest time, it's felt risky, even though the data just didn't back it up. And now that there is a significant yield gap, especially if you're looking at something like government loans that are pouring in, you can get sub 3% interest on some amazing Fannie and Freddie debt, which makes acquiring really nice communities a whole lot easier. And now you're playing the cap rate game, which completely changes the ball game for not just private equity shops, but people like Kevin and I who are raising private money to do our acquisitions. So in other words, it allows people who are starting with nothing to come in to sell. So Kevin and I both have sold out of properties. It's relatively easy to do now that the debt is matching there. And it's relatively easy for young kids with no experience, no network, and no money to get in, buy something, fix it, sell it, and then buy more on our own.
Yeah, and just speak to some of those points, Ryan. I mean, you mentioned the private equity side of this, you know, those folks that are coming into this space. You know, you got the big names like Apollo Group, you got Blackstone, you got Carlyle. They're pouring billions into the space. And while most would deem that to be competition, I view it as an opportunity. It's an opportunity for those that want to get into a value add asset, an asset that isn't fully stabilized, lends a lot of opportunity for the first time buyers, the smaller type of investors to get in, fix something up, and then have an incredible exit, if that's what they choose to do, to one of these larger groups that are paying premiums for properties. In addition to that, you know, the big PE firms aren't really much of a threat, because it's like, it's very much equivalent to that of turning of a cruise ship, right? It doesn't happen quickly. It's not nimble. It takes a lot of time and planning to actually shift the navigational pattern of a cruise ship. Smaller guys like us, folks that are just getting started, can get in, they can duck and weave a lot faster. Therefore, there's still plenty of opportunity left for that smaller investor to get into the mobile home park space and make a killing in the event they choose to exit out and sell to a larger institutional investor.
Okay. Well, just so you guys know, you guys have about a minute 49. You don't have to take it.
Oh, we do. Okay. Got it.
If you want to touch on any other points or expand upon anything.
Yeah. And one of the points about the debt as well, you know, this industry has definitely evolved over the past 10 years that I've been in it. You know, Fannie and Freddie have always been in this space. But they've really become a lot warmer, and really their interest level as far as lending on parks and even lowering their standards, I guess you could say, not just to 5-star parks, but also to 4-star, 3-star parks, what have you. The Fannie and Freddie debt that's available, as Ryan mentioned, I mean, sub 3% interest rates, 30-year terms, 10-year fixed. It's non-recourse. That is probably one of the most beautiful aspects of the debt that's available for mobile home parks, is it's non-recourse. Whereas, and correct me if I'm wrong, guys, but I don't believe there's very much non-recourse debt available in the self-storage space. That means that you're going to be signing your name on that dotted line. And if something should go wrong, your personal assets are at great risk. And so, again, you correct me if I'm wrong there, but I do believe that mobile home parks are superior when it comes to the financing that's available. So,
and just as a final point, because we know we've got like 45 seconds left, when you follow JLL, CBRE, Northmark, they all post quarterly reports that include dispositions. And boy, wouldn't you know it, it is boom time for mobile home parks. The majority of my portfolio I've bought for at or below about $20,000 a pad. And we've seen year over year huge strides in the order of 26% plus. Now our national average is about 36.5 a door and growing. And I mean, I'm seeing places like Laramie, Wyoming, in the middle of nowhere, trading for 50, 60 a door, which is just the future is up, my friends.
All right, guys. So Scott, Mike, whoever wants to kick us off here, why do you guys feel storage is a superior asset class when it comes to dispositions?
Well, you know, the model that we've had was, at least in recent years, has been to buy these facilities and take them up to a place where a REIT would be interested in buying it, because they're the ones who have the money to be able to buy at a higher or lower multiple for us, lower cap rate, which means more dollars in our pocket. So anything that we buy, we're trying to create value or develop in that 60,000 square foot range and above. Because unlike what Ryan, the stat that Ryan threw out, our industry is really only just at 10% in terms of REIT status. And so we are poised for huge consolidation. And that's what we're seeing happen right now. So there's a huge market for what we are providing to that market. Blackstone, Kevin had mentioned them as well. They just came in at one acquisition alone, a $1.2 billion acquired Simply Self Storage this year. Mr. Buffett, everybody knows who he is, and Mr. Gates also getting into the private equity side of real estate. And the only asset class they purchased, you guessed it, self-storage facilities. And so we're seeing nothing but shining faces all around the marketplace, because for self-storage, when anybody's looking at this, a hedge fund, first of all, banks, but hedge funds, any private equity markets, they're looking at the asset class that has the lowest loan default rate, and that is self-storage. Historically, over and over, year in, year out, because we do well during good times, and we do very well during a bad economy. When things are good, people buy more stuff and they put it in self-storage. Occupancy goes up. When we have a time when the economy is going down, heading into a recession or during a recession, people consolidate, businesses consolidate, we have another rush to storage. Add in this COVID pandemic, and college ended up closed out quick. Everybody put their stuff into storage. Businesses started shutting down at a record rate. People put their stuff into self-storage. They had to clear out a dining room or a spare bedroom to make an office when people came home to work. Another rush to storage. And so our occupancy continues to go up. It does extremely well during good and bad times. And so there's a ton of money that is chasing self-storage facilities, because it has the highest returns and the lowest default rate compared to all other asset classes. Green Street Advisors just put out a study recently that the only other asset class that has done better during this pandemic has been data centers. That's it. So it wasn't warehouses, Ryan. It was data centers. That's it. Self-storage is in number two position, again, outpacing in terms of returns all other asset classes in real estate with the exception of data centers.
Yeah, Scott, I'll pick up where you left off there. And I want to touch back on what some of what Kevin and Ryan were talking to, because a lot of these topics, I'll admit, are hard to separate, right? Mm-hmm. Dispositions involves financing. So it's hard to kind of put a wedge between those and completely separate them. But Kevin, I think you touched on the idea that, you know, this logical idea that people are always going to pay for the roof over their head before their storage asset. And there may be some merit to that, but let's take it one step further and look to Scott's point at the default rates. Simply put, people are more likely to default on the mortgage that provides a roof over their head, like this one here, than I am as a storage operator, statistically speaking, to default on a loan backed by my storage asset. If that doesn't tell you something about how secure the assets are and how hungry the banks are, I don't know what does. We'll touch more on that in just a minute. But Scott also brought up a great point, right? Well, let me go back. Ryan, you had mentioned Wall Street. Again, kind of bringing this idea that if you're already in the space, you're in a good position to go. But I'm speaking to the portion of the audience that is looking to get started investing. And for me, it's storage. The reason being, really, really smart people invest in this industry. Scott said it. He said, Bill Gates, Warren Buffett, I'm going to throw Scott Myers in there. I'm going to throw Mike Wagner in there. Hey, guess what, Kevin? You're coming in with me too, brother, because you are investing in this space, my man. So that's all I have on the disposition side. Aside from to share, I'll use this last minute just to give you a personal example. And I'm not pretending this is true 100% across the board, but it's the real life, my experience. I want to share it. I've taken three properties full circle, buying them for a couple hundred thousand dollars, expanding, and then selling them off. The three that I've sold, I have sold for between $1 and $1.5 million in net profits. And I did all three without a broker. Didn't have to work very hard to sell them. I was approached by the buyers. They knocked on my door, which put me in a position of strength when I was negotiating. So I was selling properties over the last 3-4 years in tertiary markets at 7.5 and 8 caps, where mobile homes in these markets are going to be at 10, 11, 12 caps. So again, that's one example. I'm not pretending that's everything. My time is up, so I'm going to turn it back over to our handsome host, Alex Pardo.
Thank you, my friend. I don't know about that, but thank you. So, guys, this is the rebuttal phase of round two on this position. So, Ryan, Kevin, whoever wants to kick it off, what do you want to rebut as far as anything that Scott or Mike shared with us just now?
Yeah, sure, plenty. So in this day and age, it gets testy when you have feelings versus data. But unfortunately, we do have to lean on data. And although, yes, you are correct, Scott, I have the same source on Green Street for data warehouses. And warehouses, yes, those did collect better than our space. However, making law, they put it out, my friend. Look it up. Y'all's industry is just more consolidated than ours. It's just about 10 years ahead of that. And because of that, and again, because I've actually done my research and I'm not just leaning on my feelings, it's just a better asset class in that regard. Now, it does is a better space because it is less consolidated. You have more mom and pops. You have possibly better opportunities for seller carry. You can buy, you know, 5 lots and still get your start. And just FYI, 60% of my deals have come completely off market. So I also haven't gone through a broker because of that. But again, you're seeing this industry start to consolidate. Everybody seems to agree it's following the same trajectory. We're just about 10 years earlier. So, for example, according to, because now I guess I'll just say all my sources here. According to Ralph Block, $27.7 billion poured into this space since 2011. And during the pandemic alone, we've seen well over $1 billion. So, again, guys, not to make this too testy here, but feelings just they just data beats feelings.
My bad, guys. 1 minute. You're good.
Yeah. No, and I'll speak to you know, the off market strategy. I mean, that's literally what we specialize in. We've bought 85% of all of our properties direct to the owner without utilizing a broker. And in turn, we have gone full cycle on a few properties and have sold them without a broker as well. So I'm not sure there's too much of a difference there between self-storage and mobile home parks. I will say that the demand is there. It's real. And you know, the whole 10 or 11 cap mention that you made, Mike, I just don't think that's reality. I think that's very far from reality. In fact, mobile home parks on average are trading at sub 6 caps, even in secondary and tertiary markets. So the demand is real, both in core and primary markets, as well as secondary and tertiary markets. And I'm pretty sure that demand is simply just outpacing self-storage.
All right, guys. Scott, Mike, so your 2.5 minute rebuttal starts now.
I can, I'm happy to pick up with a quick rebuttal. I mean, you know, the point I want to make here is going back to the consolidation and the data, if you will. I know data is cool. I've never been able to spend any of that data at the bank, so I'm not sure how valuable it is, especially when you could find a data point to support every fact that Scott and I make and every fact that Kevin and Ryan make. It really is taking a piece of data out of context. You can decide how much value you want to put on it. I'm going to put my value where my money is, and that's what I can spend. And it always comes out stronger in the storage world for a lot of reasons we're going to talk about in the later rounds. As far as this dispositions things go, I just keep coming back to this idea that storage is an expanding industry. Yes, Ryan, there is some consolidation, but there's also new inventory coming online. So while there's consolidation happening, there's a counterbalancing force in existence. We've already, and you guys have agreed with me, that in the mobile home industry, it's simply consolidating. There is no new inventory coming online. So over time, that consolidation, that constriction makes for less opportunity for the average investor. And that's who I'm speaking to, the average investor who wants to get in. Mobile home parks from acquisitions and dispositions just don't have the opportunity that storage does. Here's the idea. Here's the analogy. I just thought of it. Trying to convince somebody to invest in mobile home parks as opposed to self-storage is like saying, dude, there's so many less fax machines nowadays, no one's building them. You got to buy in. Storage is the iPhone. Mobile home parks are the fax machine. You can take that and do with it what you'd like. Scott, that gives you 1 minute, my man.
That's fine. So I would state that, you know, again, speaking from experience from where we're at right now, and that is the place where when we have projects come on board and we're putting it out there at returns, you know, internal rate of return and our, you know, multiples, everything is really in line with other commercial real estate asset classes. I mean, we're in the money business. We just happen to back it by the asset class that is the most desirable. And so we need more inventory for all the capital that's chasing it out there. Some of my other friends that are in the business that syndicate to self-storage facilities, same thing. They're putting it out to their list. They get funded in 24 to 48 hours, and they are getting snatched up. And so, Ryan, to your point, I guess a rebuttal, I didn't say that there was more opportunities in self-storage in terms of, you know, what is consolidation out there. What I'm saying is that your stat is wrong. As you said, 25% of our industry, it's only 10%. So if you're in the 7 to 8, we're really right there in the same boat, pretty dang similar. But the idea is that there's just so much chasing this asset class in self-storage because it has the lowest loan default rate. It is the easiest to run. It's the most profitable. And so when banks are looking at lending, they're going to lend on self-storage first. And that's what our hedge funds and our other investors are looking at. First of all, what gives me the greatest opportunity to get my capital back? Well, let's look across the board here. Lowest loan default rate, it's self-storage. Most profitable, self-storage. So that's why the money is chasing it. And that's why we're putting out the asset class that is the most desirable and that most people are chasing right now.
All right, guys. Hey, before we keep on and move on to round three, I appreciate you guys honoring the time. I know it's difficult to kind of like cut in the middle of making your point. So appreciate you guys working with me on that. Guys, thank you for all the comments. There's a lot of jokes going around. You guys are awesome. I appreciate all the love, all the support. Any questions you have, now's a really good time to start firing them because we're roughly about halfway through the debate. And then we got the bonus round. And then remember, we got that 15 to 30 minutes to open it up. By the way, this is my bad. I completely forgot to mention, when you guys go to REIdebate.com, you will have an opportunity to vote for whichever side slash asset class you think won this debate by making a donation. The donations are going all to the same pot, all to the same place, but we'll actually be able to track how many donations and what dollar amount was donated for each asset class. So again, it's all going to the same place, but you have your opportunity to have your voice be heard as far as who won the debate, and then we'll actually see which side was able to donate more money. I wanted to mention at the top, and I completely forgot with everything going on, single family versus multifamily debate generated, or I should say raised, roughly $3,600, $3,700. Let's see if we can beat that. Let's see if we can get over the hump of $4,000 in donations. So, Mike, I'm sorry. Did you want to say something really quick?
I was just saying, I feel like we should triple that.
If we could triple it, by all means, guys. So it's all going to a great place. So again, I want to just kind of a little bit of housekeeping, just kind of do that quick plug. You guys can vote for whichever side you think won this debate now or at the end of this, but I encourage you to wait till the end. So with that said, let me see. We started with storage, mobile home parks. So storage, guys, you got 5 minutes. We're going to move on to financing. This is a big one. Everybody's always wanting to know, how do I finance, you know, a storage facility, self-storage facility, or how do I finance a mobile home park? So when it comes to financing, what are your guys' thoughts on what makes storage, self-storage, the superior asset class?
Yeah, and you're right, Alex. It is a big one. And I think it's a pretty easy argument too. You know, the self-storage is, simply put, it's one of the easiest asset classes to get funding on. Banks, private lenders, sellers, simply put, they love storage because if you look at the underlying fundamentals, it's just a safer bet for them, right? They default less often. We can look, if we want to bring in data, like I said, we can always bring out the data to support our points. Out of 1,102 CMBS loans, only 5 were in default last year. That's 0.24%, right? And that's by S&P, in case you're wondering on the source. As I mentioned earlier, homeowners are more likely to default on the roof over their head than we are as storage investors on our assets, right? And again, this is all because of the underlying fundamentals. Storage is non-habitational. As a result, and we'll talk more about this later in operations, but we're under the umbrella of lien laws, which are way more favorable than the eviction and foreclosure laws that my mobile home park friends here have to endure. And when I say endure, that's being kind of nice to those processes. With that comes lower income and expense ratios. So there's basically, what this comes down to is there's a larger margin for error in the self-storage industry. It's more forgiving than any other asset class. And with that larger margin for error, that's not a secret. The banks know it, private lenders know it. And that's why it's easier for us to get financed on our deals. And this isn't just my opinion. This is backed up by the terms offered by banks. Mobile home parks, generally speaking, 70-80% LTV. And that's only if your park doesn't own more than a handful of the houses within the park. If you own more than a handful of those houses, they won't loan at all. On top of that, storage, we can get loans up to 90%, right? You also look at rates, debt coverage ratios, all those sorts of things. They're in the same ballpark, but if you look close enough, you'll find that storage usually has the edge. And so with that, I'm going to turn it over to Scott.
Yep. Thanks so much, Mike. And I'm just really going to kind of, we can't really say much more than we've already said, and that is the lowest loan default rate. Banks love us. Credit unions, savings and loans, community banks, the portfolio lenders, whenever we start to see a turn in the economy, they are rushing, they are throwing money at our industry. They want self-storage facilities on their balance sheet because it has the lowest loan default rate compared to any other asset class in real estate, period. And so if you can't get your self-storage facility project funded, you're probably not trying very hard at the end of the day, because banks absolutely for that reason love this. As Mike mentioned, we can go up to 90%. We can get up to 90% funding, up to 90% LTV, and we can get that through the SBA. The SBA has two programs, a 504 and a 7A, that is available for self-storage, and that's because the SBA recognizes self-storage as a business. It is a business that is also backed by real estate, and the rents that come in that are also backed by lien laws instead of habitational. So you can't get those packages, those offerings anywhere else on any other asset class, period, not just mobile home parks, than you can with the SBA, and they put it on self-storage. We're the only asset class that is backed by the federal government. And so it's pretty hard to make the argument that, you could say whether the government is either smart enough or not. Either way, if they're putting money out, they don't do it at risk. And so this is the only asset class that they are lending on. One of the other points is that, you know, we're an essential We're an essential business. You know, during COVID, I never thought we'd be talking about that during this time, but during COVID, we're an essential business. So we never shut down. And then also there was never, you know, the free money that was given out or the moratoriums on evictions because we don't have evictions. Once again, as Mike mentioned, you know, we have lien laws that protect us, the asset and the investor. If somebody doesn't pay, we overlock them. We put a lock on their unit after 6 days, and then we auction their stuff off after 90 days. And, you know, we are the judge and jury. We get paid every time. That's it. 100% of our late fees. You don't get that in any other asset class that has tenants and toilets and trash. And so for that reason, it doesn't matter. We can invest in red states. We can invest in blue states. You know, we're seeing a whole lot of folks right now and lenders that are pulling out and they're not making loans on habitational real estate in the blue states. For those of you that aren't familiar with red and blue states, you perhaps didn't pay close attention to the election, but red states. Red means right for many reasons, and blue means the other side. And that means that they get a whole bunch of free money that has been given to them. And the default rate in those states is even higher than in the red states or those that have those laws. So, Mike, we got 30 seconds. You want to add something to that?
Yeah, just in the last 20 seconds, you bring up an incredibly good point, Scott, about this government reach, overreach, who am I to say? Long story short, in habitational real estate, the government is reaching further and further in, putting moratoriums on evictions and foreclosures. I don't know what you guys think, but I don't see that becoming less of a problem over the next 4 or 8 years. In storage, the opposite is happening. The government's taking their hands off us and letting us run our businesses the way we want.
All right, gentlemen, Kevin, Ryan, you guys have 5 minutes now. You can choose to use that 5 minutes to address anything they shared, but you know, we're going to have 2.5 minutes for the rebuttal. So what are your guys' thoughts on financing when it comes to mobile home parks investing and why it makes it superior?
Ryan, you want to go first? You want me to go, bud? I'll go. So, I mean, you know, speaking to, you know, the government-backed loans, you mentioned the SBA loans, guys. I mean, obviously, we've got Fannie and Freddie in our corner, you know, which is hands down the best loan terms that exist in today's world, whether it be self-storage, mobile home parks, apartment complexes, what have you. Non-recourse, I didn't hear you guys speak anything about non-recourse. You know, my understanding is that with self-storage, the majority of the loans that are made are recourse, meaning that you're signing your personal assets on the line. In the mobile home park space, that's just not the case for the majority of loans that are made on parks. As far as as far as the available financing as well, you know, the mobile home park space is very different than what it was maybe 10 years ago. Banks, equally as much so, are tripping over themselves trying to put money into mobile home parks, trying to lend on mobile home parks. Ryan, I'm sure you probably have some data there to support this, but in any event, I don't know, there's not really so much to say about financing. I mean, mobile home parks, there's incredible financing available for them. And go ahead, Ryan.
Yeah, unfortunately, data is a double-edged sword because it's just... Alex, we probably should have skipped this section in the next one on construction because it's just we're going to be pulling at strings. And it's not that it's because our asset is inferior in certain regards, it's which it is in this regard. The financing just isn't going to be there because we're 10 years behind. We're 10, 15 years behind. And the super awesome, attractive Fannie and Freddie debt are on 4 and 5 star communities. You're going to get you don't have parking pads, you have mostly park-owned homes, wastewater treatment plant. It is going to be harder to get that debt. However, we are 10 or 15 years behind, and I don't want to speculate about using my feelings about where this is going, but it's going in an awesome direction. So, you know, while we can say what we want about, hey, we should skip these two sections, the truth of the matter is, why are we doing this beyond raising money for a wonderful cause? We're doing this because those of you listening in want to be where Mike, Scott, Kevin, and I are. We're full-time people chasing our dreams. We're so passionate about what we do. You really can't go wrong with either of these two asset classes. And I really hope as you're listening in, you know, you shouldn't be making excuses. You should go and get it. And why you should pick mobile home parks in terms of a financing standpoint is if you're chasing after really nice assets, you're getting Fannie Freddie debt, which is, like Kevin said, astounding terms, amortizations, the works. And if you're not, you're chasing after heavier value add deals like I am. Every dollar I put into the mobile home park space gives me four in return. Plus, I make significant returns on every dollar I put in. I can do that with seller carry. I can do short-term interesting loans like construction loans and then refinance out eventually with Fannie or Freddie or CMBS. I eventually can get into those bigger and better things. But again, it's not really going to be an apples to apples comparison because most people are just now learning about mobile home parks because we're over a decade, arguably well over a decade, behind in getting people comfortable in terms of banks lending on it and all of that type of stuff. So again, the ultimate point that I want to make here about financing with mobile home parks is if you are trying to get into this space, that is more reason why mobile home parks are superior, because it's the diamond in the rough not enough people know about yet. So you can start to do some really, really cool things and you can get in even with no money, no experience, and no network. Kev, you want to?
I think hit the nail on the head. Yeah, no, I think hit the nail on the head, buddy. Nothing else to share.
Awesome. By the way, I got to poke some fun at myself here because Ken Holmes and a few others have made some comments about my fancy cue cards. So done is the new perfect. If you guys know of any cool software where I can show the time to these guys and it looks cooler, great. But I actually happen to like my cue cards as long as I don't screw it up. So we had a minute, so I got a little extra time. But Mike, Scott, I'm going to kick it over to you guys for the rebuttal. You got 2.5 minutes.
Before we do that.
Yep.
Yeah. Let's give him another 30 seconds. One of them threw out something about a 5-star trailer park. What's the difference between a 1-star trailer park and a 5-star trailer park? Clear that up for me, will you?
Ouch. Shots fired.
Drug, sex, and rock and roll, which is where we do not invest our money, and lifestyle communities with palm tree lined streets and a mature tenant base and 3 swimming pools and activities directors and things like that. That's 5-star.
Well done.
You got it.
Don't forget that one traded out of San Francisco for like $270 million. One mobile home park, $270 million. So weird things definitely happen.
Proves greater theory once again.
I'm pretty sure, Scott, on your side. I've read articles on self-storage stories that have folks living in the units, meth labs and what have you. So you got a little bit of that as well on your side.
Save your ammo. We're going to hop back on track here. So Scott, Mike, you guys got 2.5 minutes for your rebuttal on the financing piece.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to be honest with you guys and just say I'm struggling right here because I don't want to rebut the concession that the mobile home park guys just gave us. We heard out of their mouths that mobile home parks is the inferior asset class when it comes to financing for a number of reasons. And so I'm not going to rebut that by any stretch. The couple things I did want to just touch on, Kevin, you mentioned the non-recourse, and I appreciate you doing that, my man. That was an oversight on our part. There are non-recourse loans available for storage investors. And here's what happens. The non-recourse loans kick in, to both your points, at a higher dollar amount, right? And so the reason that most mobile home park funding is non-recourse is because funding for the smaller mom and pop properties doesn't exist. In storage, we have non-recourse available to us when we're playing in the big leagues. And when we're just getting started, we also have a myriad of options that we can tap into to fund those smaller properties.
Yeah, I was going to touch on that as well, Mike. So I appreciate that. And the fact that, once again, when banks are lending on something in the commercial world, they're lending on the asset class. They're looking at an NOI. Here is, no matter what the piece of real estate is, the asset is, they're looking at the NOI, and that's what they are lending on, is this asset class. They're not lending so much on the borrower. They're looking more to the strength of the property than they are to the strength of the borrower. And so when you're looking at more the strength of the property, of course, it's individual per the individual product. But once again, when we look at the asset class as having the lowest loan default rate, it's actually much easier for banks to say yes to a self-storage facility. And so therefore, there's actually more non-recourse debt that is available on self-storage than there are on other asset classes. We choose not to use it too much. I mean, we did close on a $5 million project. It was a refinance of a $5 million loan on a project that we have that's all non-recourse. Now, we paid for that. The interest rate's higher when you have non-recourse debt versus personally guaranteed. And so when I can get sub 4% debt with recourse, and I spread the risk across a couple of guarantors or including myself, we'll take that. If none of us want to do that, or if the deal makes sense and we're paying 6-8% for non-recourse and I can keep it off my balance sheet, off my PFS, then we'll do that as well. It is available. It just depends for anybody asking out there, you know, wow, we want recourse debt. Well, why do you want it? I get it, but does the deal make sense? You need to match up the financing with the deal itself. And then, if it makes sense for you, great. If it doesn't make sense for the deal, then move on to the next.
All right, Kevin, Ryan, your guys' turn.
Scott, I think you just made my point there. So basically, when you want non-recourse in the self-storage space, you have to pay a premium in pricing. Whereas in the mobile home park space, you actually get premium pricing with the non-recourse debt that's available. So I think he just made my point there of why mobile home park financing is better when available. And then Mike, to your point about the size of the loan, Fannie Mae has a small loan balance program. They'll do non-recourse, really attractive debt down to $1 million. So there's many, many different options out there, even for those smaller parks. Under that 1 million umbrella, you are going to go with a local or regional bank. But again, $1 million price point, that's where most folks are entering into our space, $1 million to $2 million. That's kind of where they're, the first park size is. And so even for that beginning investor, that brand new investor, there's plenty of options for them to get really attractive non-recourse financing. Ryan, want to add anything to that, bud?
Yeah, look, when I came into this, I wanted a good, clean, honest debate with some fun, with some, controversy a little bit. Try to rattle some folks to have a good time, and also be true to the research and the data and not feelings about where I think mobile home parks could be in 10 years. Look, I said this before, I'll say it again, we're 10 years behind, and there are a lot of very good reasons why that is. So this section and the next section really isn't a true apples to apples for a lot of reasons. But hey, the good news is we can afford to lose this battle when we clearly are going to win the war. And to be fair, Alex, if you hadn't have done this, I mean, it would have been such a clear, easy win for mobile home parks. You got to give them a little something to keep this thing fun.
You guys are incredible. We actually got 45 seconds. So if you want to donate your time to the storage guys, that's on you. It's up to you.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to keep talking in circles here with the financing.
All right. We can keep it moving, guys. By the way, just a quick heads up. Like I said at the top of the show, no one here is losing. Everybody's winning. Who's really winning are those families in Guatemala. But Kristen Royce, who happens to actually sit on the board, good friend of mine, for Graces, about 10-15 minutes ago, roughly said self-storage has a very slight edge over mobile home parks in the votes currently. So any mobile home park people that are watching this and you want to support your folks, want to support your asset class, REIdebate.com to vote for them and make a donation. And then storage guys, they might catch up. So do with that what you will.
That's all for this episode of the Flip Empire Show. But we have you covered with even more expertise and resources on our website. Text EMPIRE to 67076 or head over to flipempire.com to join the newsletter and gain free instant access to our video module training course called 5 Ways to Scale Your Real Estate Wholesaling Business to 6 Figures in 6 Months or Less. For more interviews, strategies, and insights for the smart real estate investor, we'll catch you next time here on the Flip Empire Show.